The Bullock Performance Institute presents a series at Western Michigan University, presenting a real variety of guests, from soloists to ensembles, from new music to early music. And one of the guaranteed features is the presentation of faculty ensembles at Western Michigan University. And tonight, it's the Western Wind Quintet's turn to take the stage with a program called Around the World with the Western Wind Quintet. And joining me this morning are Professor of Clarinet, Bradley Wong. Good morning.
Good morning. It's always great to chat with you.
Thank you. And Paul Clifton, who is playing horn tonight and stepping into the shoes of Professor of Hornland Folk. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
It's great to see you.
It's good to be here.
So, Bradley, let me start with you and talk about the program you've prepared for tonight.
Okay. We call this our one-day world tour. It just sort of fell into place that the program ended up being very international. So we're opening with some Hungarian dances by Ferenc Farkas. Very interesting work. Farkas, of course, focuses on Hungarian music, but some of his studies were with Respighi, and this particular piece is probably his version of the Respighi Ancient Airs and Dances, because it's based on, just as Respighi took Renaissance Italian music and refashioned it for his suite, Farkas took Hungarian dances from the 17th century and sort of put them into folk music is of course, very popular there. So he cast it in sort of a folk song kind of setting, but it's using authentic Renaissance Hungarian dance tunes. His music isn't really well known. This quintet is probably the most popular of his works, at least in this country.
His first name, Ferenc, or something, is, if it, maybe he'd be better known if we all called him Frank.
Frank, yes.
Frank Farkas.
Frank Farkas.
Yes, just like Ferenc Liszt.
Yes.
Franz Frank.
But very engaging music. It starts with an entrata, sort of a processional dance. There's a slow dance. There's the third dance is actually called a shoulder blade dance, and we have no idea exactly how that looks. I've tried Googling to see what a shoulder blade dance look like, but we haven't found that yet, so maybe one of our listeners can enlighten us on that. And then there's a chorale movement and a very lively leaping dance to end that with.
So when you put a quintet of winds together, it seems like you start with almost a bountiful overabundance of color, as opposed to a string quartet where you put in the strings with the same similar sound and you get a uniformity there. And so you have so many opportunities to showcase different colors in wind quintets. When you decide to have that uniform sound, what kind of instrument do you want it to sound like? Like an organ or something?
We want it to sound like a wind quintet. We jokingly refer to a flobo sound, which is, you know, the flute and oboe melding together. But you're exactly right. The wind quintet is the only standard chamber group that does not have that homogenous sound, like a string quartet or
brass
quintet. So it offers both great challenges. For instance, flute and clarinet have completely different intonation tendencies. The articulation is different. So it is a challenge to get that unified sound. But when you do, it can create some really beautiful colors. And all the composers on this concert sort of take full advantage of that. So again, one of the unique things about the wind quintet is you can get that unified color with the horn being that great blending agent with the woodwinds. But it also offers the ability to use instruments individually and feature the instruments and solo lines, as well as that unified sound. Hindemith, the second piece on the program, is really wonderful for that. He pushes the boundaries of all the instruments individually, but also achieves some really beautiful colors in his writing.
Paul, as a horn player, you get to move between the brass quintet and the wind quintet. How do you see your role change between the two?
I probably, first of all, volume is the biggest thing to consider, because you have to think about the other four instruments you're with, and the just the plain fact that the four winds cannot produce the same kind of sound, same intensity of sound, as the four brass in the brass quintet. So considering my presence within the wind quintet is always first and foremost. And then consistently playing at a soft dynamic in order to make sure that they come out when necessary is always a priority. So always being aware of my balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thinking well beyond just the part and mm-hmm. and where it fits in mm-hmm. with everything.
What's the most important at that moment? Usually it's not me, so I have to make sure that I'm in the background. Yeah.
Well, Paul, I remember first hearing about you from an announcement in the at MLive, the Gazette, saying that a student at Western Michigan University had won an international award, a student of Lynn Folk, and was going to stay in West Michigan for a while, taking horn orchestra parts and the part in Les Miserables at the Civic. And so I was very excited to meet you when I first met you as part of the Civic production. Mm-hmm. Would you give listeners a little background on where you grew up and how you progressed so far on the horn player, as a horn player?
Mm-hmm. I'm from Michigan, primarily. Or actually, I've been in Michigan my whole life. I've lived in Howell, Michigan for a number of years, all the way from being born until high school. And then since my parents came to Western and Western Seminar Music Camp over the summer, those two influences brought me here as a student. So I came here in 2009 for my bachelor's in horn performance. I had had maybe a lesson or two with Lynn Folk prior to coming here as a student. So experiencing her in that way made me reassured that she was the right person as well as professional for me to study with. And then early on in my studies, my freshman year, I made it clear to Lynn that I wanted to be an orchestral horn player. And so she has, being, I think this is her maybe 11th or 12th year here as a professor, she's made her mark as an orchestral freelancer in the Grand Rapids Symphony, Kalamazoo, Battle Creek. And so she had these connections, and she told me that I should get myself out, email and contact as many orchestral horn players in the area as I can and play for them as much as I can, and so they can hear me then. I can hear me a couple years later how I progress, and hopefully I can get on their sub lists. That's how the process goes, is that you usually you connect with them personally, you play for them, they place you on their substitute list, and then eventually when they have a need, they'll call you. And then hopefully after that, there might be a position open, and then you can take the audition and hopefully win the position, which is what I've been fortunate to I'll say, learn how to do, mm-hmm. because there is really a mental and emotional and physical process to orchestral auditioning. You have to know how to prepare the excerpts in a really traditional way, and then you have to be able to control your mental and emotional processes through the entire ordeal, because it's pretty rigid, pretty strict. Yeah. But once you learn how to go through that process, then I'm just 22 years old, but I've probably taken about 10 or so regional and major orchestral auditions. And so in a short period of time, that's allowed me to learn how to know myself in that process.
You can see some parallels between, say, being an athlete or even being a musician is akin to being a small business owner.
You are an entrepreneur, that's for sure.
Yeah, you have to get out.
Market yourself. Mm-hmm. Right? Very much so.
And Bradley, you've had the opportunity to watch this process with any number of students of your own and with Paul. It's a little unusual to be working with Paul, a former student like this, though, in the wind quintet.
Yeah, that. Well, yes, we don't often do it in the quintet, but when you're in the business long enough, you hope to do professional things with your students. I remember playing in one KSO concert where I was a guest principal, and two or three of my former students were also in the section, which I thought was very special. But with Paul, Paul is very talented, and in fact, the quintet did a project going down to Honduras and working in a chamber festival there, and we took a student quintet, and Paul was in that group. So that was, we thought enough of him then to bring him on some international outreach program like that. But when, with Dr. Folk being on sabbatical, she's so active that we actually have three different horn players splitting up her duties. Somebody else is playing in the brass quintet, somebody's doing the teaching. We were delighted that Paul was interested and available to play with the faculty quintet. Probably the hardest transition for him was learning to call us by our first names, which is something that Sandra
hasn't. Was uncomfortable at first. So habitually professor, doctor, and then suddenly Brad and Wendy.
Yeah.
And, yeah. It's fun, though. The environment is fun. Yeah,
is Paul a Lynn clone when you're playing together? Or is...
Well, you definitely see those influences of he's worked with her closely, and so you see that. But you know, we want our students to be not really clones of ourselves. That we want them to take everything from all of their experiences. And so when Paul plays, it's him. I think it's also been nice for us to. It's been a great experience for him to play with our group and to do the activities we're doing. And, I think he's gained a lot from that. And it's nice to still be able to mentor him to a certain extent. But we consider him, he's a colleague, he's an equal. We don't pull any punches in rehearsals. And neither does he.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. My very first orchestra position that I won, second horn in the Southwest Michigan Symphony, Professor Wong, Brad Wong's wife, Betsy Wong, is the personnel manager and principal flute. And so I took an audition maybe 3 years ago, made it to the final round in Southwest Michigan, but didn't win. The next year is when I won the position. And so she coached me when I was in high school at the seminar high school camp. And then she saw me again in those orchestral auditions as personnel manager. And then I came and I worked with Professor Wong as a student. And now I'm working with Professor Wong and playing with Betsy in the Southwest Michigan Symphony. So it's been a cool connection to work with both of them for years.
Well, yeah, thank you for giving us the roadmap, the details of how that process really works. And I think it's certainly worth mentioning that not only you are a music student and a successful musician from Western, but your brother Evan on trombone is also making waves as a great player. Yep. So quite a musical family.
Yeah, it's I'm glad to see him making his own mark, because I know I'm the oldest of three, and so I can empathize with him, but I, of course I'm not in his position of being the middle child, and so I don't know that kind of pressure that he can put on himself when he sees me doing what I do, and he wants to do the same thing with a different instrument. But of course, he chose to come to the same school. We went to the same high school. He used to be known for a long time as Paul's brother, and that's just demeaning.
Well, that cannot last.
No, it can't. So I'm glad to see that he won his first audition,
really?
The same year that I did. And now he's having success in his own competitions as well. I'm glad for him.
Well, I think we'll take a short break and listen to some of the music from this Hungarian composer, Ferenc Farkas, or Frank, as we like to call him. Reminder that the concert tonight starts at 7:30, although, as always with the live and interactive BPI series, you can show up at 7 and enjoy an interactive discussion with members of the Wind Quintet talking about the program. Full details online at milleroditorium.com or call 387-2300 for ticket information. We'll start with the opening, I think. Maybe hear one or two movements from early Hungarian dances from the 17th century. Thank you. We heard a few of the early Hungarian dances from the 17th century written by Frank or Ferenc Farkas, possibly under the influence of the great Italian composer Ottorino Respighi, influenced by the ancient airs and dances suites. And boy, those are very, very attractive pieces and a great way to start the program.
Thank you.
My guests are Dr. Brad Wong of the School of Music at Western Michigan University and horn player Paul Clifton, who is playing horn tonight with the Western Wind Quintet, student of Lynn Folk, former student and now professional horn player here in Michigan and regionally beyond as well. Tonight's program starts at 7:30 again, and it also has a live and interactive portion starting at 7 o'clock. Full details online at milleraudatorium.com or call 387-2300. The program continues with the Kleine Kammermusik, Opus 24, number 2 by Paul Hindemith. This is a composer, I think, that is greatly admired by musicians because he worked so hard to make every instrument its own sonata and to give musical form the center stage of his pieces.
Yes, and he knew the instrument so well. He played many of them, and his writing is so idiomatic. That's what makes this quintet so special, that he knows how to write for these instruments, both in their solo lines and in the blends. There's some remarkable sonorities in this quintet, and it's one of the mainstays in the quintet repertoire, rightfully so.
I've asked this question recently of other guests about other composers, but I'll use it again. When you're listening to Paul Hindemith's music, what are some of the commonly used techniques that sort of make Hindemith, that give him that signature?
Well, in this particular work, this is from a period that he was, it was pretty neoclassical writing, so very contrapuntal and fairly dense. What makes it work for Hindemith, again, is his knowledge of orchestration and how to combine the sonorities so that everything works. I think one of the most notable things about the quintet is his use of rhythmic ostinati. It gives it a real drive. There's a quality of forward motion in all of the fast movements that's pretty relentless because of his use of the repeated rhythmic ideas. And then on top of that, the solo lines, again, just such skillful writing for the instrument so that it brings out the characters of the instruments and really extends the ranges. The bassoon is quite often in the very low register and then up in the altissimo. So there's some really striking effects that he uses. So I would start with the rhythmic ostinati and then the use of the instruments in solo passages, and then the colors that he uses. He does use piccolo, real effective use of muted horn, and just makes those combinations. There's also, he's very masterful at taking, because it's neoclassical, the third movement is a waltz, but it's sort of a parody of a waltz. There's some comic elements to it. There's always a hint of irony. Some unexpected, always unexpected moments. So he takes very standard forms and just transforms them into something very interesting.
You could have told me, I think I remember hearing, Paul Hindemith writes in a tonal language. But when I first encountered Hindemith, I don't think I would have believed you because he has no problem with dissonance on a fairly regular basis.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, nowadays it's fairly tame. But when I studied this piece when I was in college, when I was Paul's age, which was a long time ago, it took some getting used to. And the other great thing about Hindemith, I always think of when I teach the clarinet sonata, it's his craftsmanship is impeccable. And I tell the students, you don't need to understand that this is based on fourths, but when you do, you see what he's able to do with it. And I think earmark of a good composer is whatever system he or she uses, you're not aware of the system. You're just aware of the music. And mm-hmm. Hindemith does that very well.
Paul, when I talk about the struggle to adapt my ears to dissonance and new music sounds and things like that, you're a generation behind me. Is it any different in today's musical world to is it easier to absorb dissonance, or does it seem as weird?
I don't think it seems as weird. Simply because we haven't, well, yes, we do experience traditional all the time, harmonies, classical all the time, but just as well, it's easier for us to be exposed to contemporary with all of the connectivity that the world has now. It's far easier for someone to create something new and share it with people, especially of my generation, who are connected as we are. When I played the Hindemith Sonata for horn in college, I also experienced, I was a little bit overwhelmed by thinking, by the tonalities, by the different intervals that he uses. And there are certain patterns to that, certain intervals he'll focus on in certain phrases, but generally it was very, very challenging for me to really pick it out. But like Brad said, I really didn't have to. I had to create a certain kind of sound for it that was not classical. Lynn, she would refer to it as a block sound. It had to sound very kind of thick and straightforward, almost mechanical sometimes, so that the interpretation is different as well of this newer music. But generally, it is pretty comfortable in comparison, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure David Coulson would totally agree, knowing he grew up with George Crumb and all that great stuff. But that's another hallmark, I think, that you pointed out about Paul Hindemith. He's quite straightforward. He's not like working in a sort of fuzzy, nebulous impressionism way. He will put those rigorous harmonies right out there, mm-hmm. and it's bracing, might mm-hmm. be the word.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, the writing is very direct, but it makes it very effective.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think if I can do this, I can cue it up to this waltz you were referring to from a recording from the Bergen Wind Quintet. Reminder to folks that you can hear this entire piece in full performed by the wonderful Western Wind Quintet tonight at 7:30 in the Dalton Center Recital Hall. Details online at milleraudatorium.com, and ticket information also at 387-2300. That's music of Paul Hindemith, and if you were listening to my discussion with Paul Clifton and Brad Wong of the Western Wind Quintet, you would have heard a bit of a bait and switch I gave before we played the music. I was leading into saying something like Paul Hindemith is very dissonant, and it's, boy, to these old ears now, it's as pleasant as anything.
Really. Well, yeah, that's as we discussed it used to be considered very dissonant, and now it's really not. It's very spiky, but very listenable.
And a core piece for wind quintet repertoire.
Yes, and the movements you heard demonstrated the Hindemith's use of parody, that the waltz was just a very humorous parody of a waltz. And then in the slow movement, some beautiful colors, including that sort of haunting middle section where there's an ostinato in very soft in the upper winds, and then a really beautiful sustained line in the double reeds. And then the very last section had those virtuoso little cadenza sections.
Paul Hindemith was born in Germany, but he made a huge impact on American music.
Yes, yeah. He spent a lot of time in this country. There was enough unrest in Germany at the time that he felt the need to come over here. And
I think his music was declared Entarte Musik, or yes, the forbidden,
yes,
music.
Yes, including the Opus 24 number 2, which doesn't seem controversial at all, but it was on that list.
And so he found a home in the United States, and he taught at a high level, one of the Eastern colleges, I think, Yale or Princeton.
I think
or
Yale,
something.
Yes.
Yeah. So a very important figure to not only our body of music, but also to people he taught growing up in, or composition, composers of the day, and really made a difference here.
Yes,
in American music.
Yeah. And also in music education. A lot of his music he wrote with the intent that amateurs could play it as well as professionals, and not only amateurs, but students. So the clarinet sonata, for instance, as I mentioned, is technically very doable by a young college student, but the level of musicality in it is really quite high.
Not only is horn player Paul Clifton joining you tonight, but you also have a special guest playing oboe.
Yes, Gabriel Renteria, the wonderful principal oboist in the Kalamazoo Symphony, is joining us for this concert. We've been delighted to have him. He's fit in very well. And again, you hear in the quintet that the oboe is a very prominent voice, and we're delighted to have his talents.
Originally from the Los Angeles area, if I remember when I spoke with him, he's an unassuming fellow with a terrific sound, and adds a lot to every ensemble he's in.
Yeah, exactly. A very important person in the local musical community.
Well, that must be nice to have him with you.
It's a great pleasure.
Let's look a little further on the program. This one was written by a flute player, a quintet by Paul Taffanel.
Taffanel, considered the father of French flute playing, which it was a huge influence in this country. Known, from flutist through his etude books, but this work is really a marvelous work. There's not a lot in the quintet repertoire that's in this romantic style. So somebody described it as being like French Mendelssohn, and that probably describes it well. The colors, the sonorities, it's sort of mercurial, changes moods very quickly, and very flute centric. So Dr. Council Vargas will have her work cut out for her, but it's been really wonderful to work on the piece.
Dr. Council Vargas is also celebrating the release of her new recording called Grand Danson, and it was such a pleasure to have her on the air a couple of weeks ago. And I hope that she talked with you about maybe offering her CD for sale tonight.
Oh, we hadn't thought about that, but it's an incredible CD. I had it on just the other day, and it's... I'm so proud to work with these kinds of colleagues.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. Well, then there's a final work that closes out this program, Around the World with the Western Wind Quintet. And Valerie Coleman is another flutist.
Another flutist. A flutist and composer. One of the founders of the Imani Winds. Wonderful quintet that will be here with Fontana. Will be sponsoring them. I believe the concert is April 12th. The whole concept of Imani was to celebrate their African-American heritage. And this piece, Moja, even though it's part of the first day of Kwanzaa and we're nowhere near Kwanzaa, it's just such an infectious piece. It's sort of a groove-based melody, and the title means unity. And the call for unity comes from Valerie's use of sort of the call and response in this. So it's a wonderful little piece. Actually, Chamber Music America named it one of the top 101 American pieces. So we're always thrilled to play it.
Any final thoughts on tonight's program, which starts at 7:30 in the Western Michigan University Dalton Center, with details at milleraudatorium.com if folks want to know more about tickets? Any final way to tie up this program?
It's a great ride. It's like we said, we call it our one-day world tour, and it's been a great pleasure putting this program together, and if you can come, I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Any final thoughts from you, Paul?
I'm glad to be here.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, I will pick a movement from the Tafanel Wind Quintet. The talented flutist professor at the Conservatoire de Paris, and I think he led the opera orchestra.
Yes, yeah, he's also a conductor.
Well.
Yeah.
So, a wonderful character that is always good to know, and his music is so fun to listen to. I hope you have a terrific concert tonight, the Western Wind Quintet, in concert, 7:30, with a 7 o'clock live and interactive discussion with Dr. Daniel Jacobson leading this discussion on the program. Thanks for tuning in. Let's listen to music of Paul Tafanel. Thank you.